South Korea ousts another president.
I declare that the impeachment motion of Prime Minister Han Duck-soo was passed.
Many workers will be required to come back to the office full-time in 2025. And there are compelling reasons why companies want their people back in the building.
The downsides of working remotely is you don't have that face-to-face interaction with your bosses, with your teammates. And so sometimes if you're standing around the water cooler and spitballing ideas on a new project, those ideas don't flow as well over Zoom or through the internet.
Join us now on The Voice of America as we explore the issues in the news. I'm Scott Walterman in Washington. Members of South Korea's parliament just screaming at the podium during a session that ended by impeaching acting President Han Duck-soo on Friday, less than 2 weeks after suspending President Yoon Suk-yeol in his powers over his short-lived declaration of martial law. As we hear in this report from Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo, it has plunged the country deeper into political chaos.
South Korea's National Assembly Speaker Woo Won-sik.
I declare that the impeachment motion of Prime Minister Han Duck-soo was passed, with 192 votes out of 192 votes cast.
The motion, led by opposition parties, passed with no opposing votes after the ruling People Power Party boycotted the ballot. This latest impeachment plunges South Korea deeper into the political chaos triggered by Yoon's short-lived declaration of martial law. The South Korean won currency plunged to the lowest since March 2009 amid turmoil.
Han Duck-soo 총리가
The main opposition Democratic Party unveiled a plan to impeach Han on Thursday after he declined to immediately appoint three justices to fill vacancies at the Constitutional Court. Han had said it would exceed his powers as acting president. As the next in line under the law, Finance Minister Choi Sang-mok now assumes the acting presidency. The impeachment also took place on the day that Yoon faced the first hearing in a case that will determine his fate. South Korea's Constitutional Court is to determine whether to overturn his impeachment and reinstate him, or remove him permanently from office. Pro and anti-Yoon groups held separate rallies outside. Yoon was not required to attend Friday's hearing. If he is ousted, a new presidential election would be held within 60 days.
Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo. Now, Han's impeachment not only further deepens South Korea's political crisis, but it also has huge implications outside its borders, as South Korea is a major player on the world stage, a role that has been increasing lately. So let's talk about this. Joining us now, we're very lucky to have Victor Cha, president of the Geopolitics and Foreign Policy Department and Korea Chair at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He was appointed in 2021 by the Biden administration to serve on the Defense Policy Board in an advisory role to the Secretary of Defense, and from 2004 to 2007, he served on the National Security Council and was responsible for Japan, Korea, Australia, New Zealand, and Pacific Island nations. So thank you so very much for being able to join us and talk about this.
My pleasure.
So tell us what's happened the latest. The first acting president has been now impeached following the impeachment of the president. How did that happen?
So essentially, this is an effort by the opposition party to remove from office the acting president, former prime minister, acting president, because of his unwillingness to approve the appointment of three new judges to the Constitutional Court that would then decide on the impeachment. The first impeachment, the impeachment of the original president, President Yoon. So this is a political crisis that seems to just get deeper and deeper with no clear end in sight.
Yeah, the assembly sort of fell apart today because, well, first they changed the vote where you needed 200 votes to impeach Yoon, and now for Han, it was 151, even though eventually 196 voted to impeach. But then their own party, the ruling party, boycotted the vote. And then they just started screaming at each other.
Yeah, it's the political discussions and debates are getting more and more physical as emotions are getting higher and higher, and the crisis is continuing to deepen. I mean, I think the most important and worrying thing is that there's political dysfunction in this country at this moment with no clear end in sight. At a time when there were a lot of things that Korea was doing in the region and on the world stage that were very helpful and appreciated by the rest of the world. And all of that, I think, is now on hold until they figure out what's happening at home and who's going to lead the country.
You mean as it relates to North Korea's sudden expansion of relations with China and Russia?
Yes, but South Korea itself was improving relations with Japan. It was improving trilateral relations with the United States and Japan and South Korea. It was participating in important supply chains having to do with semiconductors and electric vehicle batteries. It was providing support in Ukraine. They were participating in the G7, in NATO summit meetings. They were really playing a big role on the world stage. And I think this political crisis has kind of put all that on hold for now. And again, you know, if you sort of look at the timetable here, the likelihood of a new president coming into Korea might be at earliest midsummer, which is a long time from now.
So we'll get back to that in a second. But how did we get here? I mean, we know that the trigger for all of this was the declaration of martial law, but that didn't come out of nowhere. Where did that come from?
So I would say the roots of this started back in the spring of this past year, spring of 2024, when the opposition party won a resounding victory in South Korea's midterm elections, giving them an even bigger majority in the legislature. They then blocked everything that the ruling party and the government was trying to do in terms of all legislation and the national budget. In addition to that, there was political battles taking place where the opposition party was going after the first lady of South Korea for possible corruption charges. And the ruling party and the government were going after the leader of the opposition also for corruption charges. And so I think this all spiraled into a decision by President Yoon back in early December to declare martial law.
And that went badly for him. He got impeached. Now, that impeachment is still in progress, as you mentioned. There is a court, right? The Constitutional Court has to decide his actual fate, whether or not he will be impeached and suspended or returned or be allowed to return.
That's right. Once the legislature votes on impeachment, the Constitutional Court then has 6 months to decide whether that motion is constitutional or not. In 2004, South Korea impeached a president and the Constitutional Court overrode that impeachment, and so he went back to work. In 2017, the legislature impeached the South Korean president and the court upheld that, and that president was impeached and expelled. And so with the current president, President Yoon, we will see what the Constitutional Court decides.
And then that was what the row was with his temporary replacement, the acting president, because they wanted him to appoint specific judges to this court?
Yes, there's right now the Constitutional Court usually has 9 judges. There are 3 vacancies right now. There were 3 slated people to fill those roles. But the acting president refused to endorse it unless it was something that was agreed on by both the ruling and the opposition parties.
Mm. So now who takes over from him?
So who has replaced him is the deputy prime minister, who is also the finance minister. Choi Sang-mok is the current acting president of Korea.
And so he's third in line in the succession?
Yes, apparently so. I did not know, but apparently
So, I assume the same thing can happen to him. I mean, is there really an end in sight to this?
Well, this is the thing that concerns me, because he will be faced with the same decision that acting President Han did, which is the opposition party calling for the acting president to approve the three slated to fill out the bench of the Constitutional Court, the last three seats. And if he chooses not to, as his predecessor did, then I'm sure the legislature will try to impeach him as well.
You know, when you were describing the acrimony between the two parties, I couldn't help myself. I was thinking, wow, it sounds like us in the United States. The two parties just hate each other so much that this could easily happen here too.
Well, I mean, there are similarities. I mean, Korea is a vibrant and rambunctious democracy, just like our own democracy in the United States. And the use of impeachments, I think, is much more, we've seen much more use of impeachment in South Korea than we've seen in the United States. But of course, it's not unprecedented in both countries.
Let's get back to what you were talking about in terms of South Korea's role on the world stage and how it's been growing and how this is going to disrupt it. It, particularly in a region of the world where there's a lot at play right now, China, North Korea, Vietnam, you know, it's a very active political stew, isn't it?
Yes, there is a lot going on in terms of Russia, North Korea cooperation in Ukraine. Russians providing a great deal of energy, food, fuel, possibly nuclear technology to North Korea in return for our North Korean troops and North Korean ammunition. China is much more assertive in the region and has tighter relations with Russia as well and with North Korea. And then, of course, the United States has a new president coming into office on January 20th, 21st, and there won't be a president in South Korea who he can talk to.
And, you know, I remember that there was tension between South Korea and the United States during the first Trump administration, particularly over the amount of money that the United States military spends on the peninsula.
Yes, there was a disagreement back then where there's something called the Special Measures Agreement, which is basically a cost-sharing agreement between the United States and South Korea that determines how much the South Korean government will pay for the non-personnel costs of U.S. forces in Korea. It's generally about $1 billion, and Trump wanted $5 billion. Now he wants $10 billion the second time around. And so that's clearly going to be something that will be an obstacle in the relationship. But again, there won't be a government, or there at least won't be a president that's not an acting president or an interim president in South Korea, probably until the summer of 2025.
And what's the process for that? Let's say that the court upholds the impeachments. Is there an election, or how does that happen?
If the court upholds the impeachment, then there's a 2-month campaign period and a snap election for the next president of the United States. And that next president doesn't have a transition period. The day after they're elected, they take office. Hmm. So even then, even if they took office in the summer, they still would need time to sort of, you know, get themselves set up, appoint all of their cabinet ministers, all the other things you would expect in a transition. So they, you know, well, again, we're talking about a protracted period of political dysfunction in the 13th largest economy in the world, one of the most prominent democracies in Asia, not ideal at all.
There's talk that one of the reasons that North Korea sent troops to Ukraine was to build experience on the battlefield. And then, of course, the next thought after that was to be used in a potential battle with South Korea. You know, a lot of people don't know, they don't remember, they never knew. That war never ended. It's just paused.
That's right. The Korean War never ended. It was hostilities were ceased with an armistice, a ceasefire, in July of 1953, and it's sort of been in that state since then. There is no peace treaty between the two sides. And yes, I mean, North Korea sent these troops in part for them to gain combat experience, but as we're seeing from the press reports, many of them are being killed in action. But the other reason I think the North Koreans sent them is to cement this new alliance with Russia that is of the same sort of clarity and commitment that we saw during the Cold War between North Korea and the Soviet Union.
In this period of chaos in the South, is there a real danger with North Korea's instability and newfound, confidence with Russia behind it?
I think it's certainly, the longer this goes on, I think it's certainly something to be worried about. Right now, the North Koreans have been sitting back and kind of watching what is happening in South Korea. But the longer this goes on and the more confidence North Korea has from the security guarantee from Russia, it could cause them to overstep or overreach and do something that could spark tensions on the peninsula.
Hmm. Thank you so much for the insight. The info is overwhelming. We'll be keeping an eye on this. Would love to talk to you again as it develops.
Okay. Thank you.
Victor Cha, president of the Geopolitics and Foreign Policy Department and Korea chair at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. There are more than 28,000 U.S. troops stationed in South Korea. A U.S. official said on Friday that Washington is closely monitoring the situation. You're listening to Issues in the News. I'm Scott Walterman.
Stand together! Don't turn back!
Stand together!
Power to the workers!
That was a protest by Amazon workers back in May of 2023 when they were told they had to return to the office. Many workers are facing this new reality heading into 2025 after years of working from the comfort of home, and they're now being told it's time to return to the office full-time for the first time since the coronavirus pandemic. Workers at Amazon, AT&T, and other companies have been called back to the office 5 days a week. And if the incoming Trump administration has its way, it will happen to federal workers as well. It's a trend happening all over the world as employers think it's time. Now, I remember personally saying back when the pandemic took hold that people were never going back to the office. But working in isolation does have its downside. Here's an interview from April 2021 with someone who understood that even then, when most people were working from home.
We are social animals. Businesses are creative and they strive and they work because people are working together and sitting together and putting their heads together.
That was Herbert Zanier, co-owner of Noosa Kitchen in downtown London. Let's talk about this. Joining us now is Evan Starr, professor of management and organization at the Robert H. Smith School of Business at the University of Maryland. Thank you so very much for being able to take time to talk to us about this.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
So 2025, I think, is going to be the year that people came back to the office from the pandemic. A lot of companies, Amazon, AT&T, are telling people it's time. 5 days a week, come back to the office. Big transition for people.
It's a big transition for people. It's a big transition for companies. And I think what we've learned over the last few years in this experiment in remote work is that there's a large swath of workers who really value remote work and for whom it's good for employers as well. And I do expect a bit of a backlash from workers who are used to remote work, especially women, those who have needs they have to take care of at home, to have a bit more backlash. And I could see companies struggling with retention for some of those individuals, and that's going to present opportunities in the labor market for companies that that can staff those roles in remote work.
What are the advantages of remote work?
Well, if you are able to work remotely and you have little kids and you're managing daycare situations, it gives you flexibility. You don't have to run to the office and then run back and manage daycare and work. You can work from home and take care of the dinner prep when you have a spare moment during your lunch break. You can Skype in, you can work from anywhere. And so you can be somewhere where it's less expensive for you, where you have family nearby. There's a lot of benefits to remote work for workers. Maybe if you're stuck in New York City and you're paying high rent and you want to get out and you can afford, much more somewhere else and be near family and take care of, your kids in a way that gives you more time, have more real income. It can be a huge boon to a wide swath of the workforce.
What are the downsides for working remotely?
Well, the downsides of working remotely is you don't have that face-to-face interaction with your bosses, with your teammates. And so sometimes if you're standing around the water cooler and spitballing ideas on a new project, those ideas don't flow as well over Zoom or through the internet as they do when you're in person and you're really working together and you can be fully committed to a particular project. And so there are benefits, of course, to the individual, but there can be costs to the organization. I think many organizations are moving to sort of a hybrid model where they try to sync in time the team meetings where everybody can be together, but then also allow people to work from home to give them those benefits.
I understand that it's also difficult to mentor your younger workers because they're not interacting with the experienced workers.
Absolutely, yeah. The people who may need to be one-on-one with a senior worker to watch them work in the trenches and to learn from them, it's harder to do that online. And so you can imagine that younger workers may not be getting the on-the-job training that they would get if they were in person.
It also impacts the world around the businesses. Office space providers and restaurants near office space and, all of the ancillary industries that feed off of a in-person workforce, right?
Absolutely. You've got the transit systems that get you from miles away from the office to the office. You've got the expensive downtown buildings that are empty. During the COVID pandemic, there was what they called a donut effect, where if you're living in the expensive downtown city center, that everyone kind of moves outwards a little bit because you don't have to be downtown. And so it absolutely affects the rental value of the properties, the restaurants, everybody working nearby. At the same time, it just changes the geographic distribution of the demand for those products, because now instead of being in a city center, now there's going to be more demand outside where the people have moved to.
Anything else do you think that we should be on the lookout for the next year, two, three?
Well, I think it'll be interesting. If Trump and the Trump administration goes through and passes many of these tariffs, it's very possible that inflation could tick up. And I think that one of the things that we saw under the Biden administration was strong real wage growth that we really hadn't seen for quite some time. The thing about real wage growth is that it means that net of inflation, workers have more take-home pay. And if inflation ticks up because of these tariffs, then you could start seeing declines in real wages, and that would be troubling for workers. So that would be something to look out for.
Evan Starr, a professor of management and organization at the Robert H. Smith School of Business at the University of Maryland. And that's all the time we have this week. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. For more news throughout the week, listen to our podcast, The Issue, which is posted on our website, voanews.com, and is also available wherever you get your podcasts from. Join us next week for more Issues in the News. Until then, I'm Scott Walterman in Washington.